Please go ahead. The call is now being recorded.
Thank you, Tim. Good morning, good afternoon, good evening. This is the NCST Executive Committee meeting on the 8th of November 2011. On the call today, we have Rafik Damak, Klaus Stoll, Robin Gross, Milton Müller. From staff, we have myself, Natalie Peregrine. I would ask you to please state your name before speaking for transcription purposes. Thank you very much, and over to you.
Thank you very much. This is Robin Gross. I'm the new chair of the executive committee, as you all know. And let me just briefly say what we're going to talk about this morning. Maybe for 15 minutes or so, we can go through the review of the membership application procedures when people apply for membership into the non-commercial stakeholder group. And then we've got quite a list of applications to actually look at, 2021 applications that have come in the last month or so and need to be dealt with. And so that will probably take the bulk of our time is discussing those. And then we should also quickly touch upon the establishment of the financial and membership committees, which we are supposed to do under the charter. So did anyone have any questions on the agenda? Shall we just roll right into it? Okay, great. So let's try to get a process, like an understanding for how we're going to handle membership applications. We're relatively new here, brand new, in setting up this non-commercial stakeholder group and setting up processes for joining and for evaluating applications, and so that sort of means we have more work than a typical executive committee who can just follow the pre-existing procedures, but we need to create some procedures ourselves. So what I'd like to talk about is how we handle these membership applications, because, you know, a lot of can't come in and they've just kind of sat there, and so we need to have a process in place to deal with that and in a timely fashion. I mean, frankly, I'm sympathetic to concerns that some of these applications haven't been addressed yet. So without further ado, I think I've set up an email address for people to send inquiries to. So it's joinncsg@ipjustice.org. So if anyone has any questions on or inquiries on membership, they can always send something to that email address, and that I'll forward that on to the executive committee, and so we can get it. We've at least got a working email address for people to send things to. So one of the things under the charter that is really important that the executive committee do is set up an online membership form. So when people want to join the NCSG, there's a form. They can just click on it and fill out their data, and it gets submitted, and we can review that data and get back to them in a timely fashion. So there hasn't been any membership forms available yet. So we've asked Konstantinos and Amber to create some joint forms for joining NCSG jointly with the different constituencies, and we've got one from Konstantinos, two actually, because we've got one from him that's a organizational form and one that's an individual form for individual membership, and I believe Amber's also working on a joint membership form as well. So we can get these posted to the website as soon as possible. I sent around earlier this morning the forms that Konstantinos has submitted. So if you haven't had a chance to check your email yet, you might want to take a look at that and just see the forms he's creating and look pretty good to me. So I think we can put these up on the website, the NCSG Wiki, pretty quick, and have some online membership forms working. So I don't know if anyone has any questions on those forms, if you've had a chance to take a look at them, or any other suggestions for the membership form part of it. If so, please just, you know, speak up. But make sure you say your name for the transcript and such. So anyways, once these forms are submitted with the data in them, I would like to get back to the applicant within 2 weeks. I mean, so we've got some kind of a time frame that they can expect to hear some kind of response from us. You know, we haven't had any process in place before this to sort of deal with this in a timely fashion. So I think we can get back to them within 2 weeks. That's a reasonable amount of time. And I can do the first cut, if you will, just in terms of looking at the membership application and just to see if it's complete. If it is, you know, filled with just a bunch of spam and trying to sell products, as sometimes membership forms get filled out with, doesn't need to be forwarded on to the executive committee, or if it's incomplete and doesn't have the requisite data that needs to be supplied for an evaluation by the executive committee, I'll get back to them, the applicant, and let them know that it's missing some information, and would they please resubmit or supply that missing requisite information into the application so the executive committee can review and evaluate the application. So once we've got a complete application, it can be forwarded on to the entire executive committee for the evaluation and for conducting the due diligence that we need to do. And this is the part where if it's an organization, we need to verify that it's an organization that really exists, that really wants to join NCSG, that really is non-commercial. So this is the part that could take a little bit of time. I'm thinking if we had 2 weeks for the members of the executive committee to conduct their due diligence, that's probably enough time. But that's, you know, I kind of want to throw that out there and see what you guys think, because, you know, you'll be the ones expected to conduct this due diligence. And so do you think that's sufficient period of time? Once you get a complete application to do your research and verification and validation, that sort of thing?
This is Milton. Yeah, I think 2 weeks is plenty. Should be, anyway.
Great.
Ruben? It's Rafik. I think 2 weeks is enough, but just to remember that not all the, I'd say, period in the year has the same. If we have application like 2 days before Christmas, it's not a problem for me. I don't celebrate Christmas. It doesn't mean anything to me. But for the rest of you, it's a holiday, etc. So we should be careful about just to say 2 weeks, maybe 2 weeks business day or something like that. It's more, it can
two
be more accurate.
2 weeks, two actual, you know, days that people are working, and I take your point that, you know, not a lot of people are working the week between Christmas and New Year's, and that is one of the reasons why many lawsuits get filed during that week. But I don't actually expect we'll get an onslaught of applications the day after Christmas. But you're right, we want to take that into consideration, and so I think that, you know, roughly 2 weeks. But if we say, you know, business days, I think that can, you know, give us a little bit more flexibility there as well. Okay, so then we've got our 2 week period that we're going to be doing our due diligence. And we can discuss on the mailing list also some of these applications, and, you know, share information and that sort of thing to sort of help make our initial determinations. And then after the end of this 2 week period, we'll have if we have one of these EC meetings every month, then whatever the next preceding EC meeting is, we can deal with whatever applications are then pending and need to be dealt with. So, you know, we can just plan as a regular course to discuss any pending applications at the EC meeting and make an initial determination as to their approval.
Robin?
Yes.
It's traffic speed. how many EC meetings are you expecting per month?
One.
No.
One EC
one.
Meeting. Yeah.
Yeah, that's 1 hour. You know, otherwise I will complain about the time. Okay.
But,
yeah.
Is that okay? And we may not need to do these EC meetings every month after a while. I'm just thinking right now when we have to set up all these processes and we have all these backlog of applications to deal with, that now we need to have at least a monthly one-hour meeting. And, you know, maybe 6 months from now we've got processes in place, we don't have the backlog of applications to deal with, and so it may not be necessary then. But I think it is for now, since we're setting things up and we're trying to clean up a lot of things that were left unfinished. So I think
it's just like, for example, if it's like organized in maybe Friday for you, which means Saturday morning for me, it's okay because I can manage that. But you see, it's always in Wednesday in the middle of week, weekday. So it's not easy because I also have some working groups, meetings, calls, and so on. So I'm not really, won't be really, happy to have all my nights packed. I can call.
Right. Well, you know, we'll have to take that into consideration and try to find some times that are a little more favorable to you. So I do appreciate your, you know, special need in the Asia-Pacific region. It's not easy to find times that coordinate with the rest of the world, it seems. So I am sympathetic.
It's okay, but it's just like the day. So I'd say it's Friday for you, it's okay for me.
Yeah. I mean, I think we had a Friday on one of the doodles this month, and like, you know, two people said they were available, you and me. So, you know, we could have a meeting of you and me, but I'm not sure that would be useful. Okay. So, with respect to these membership applications, we'll make an initial determination then at the EC meeting after the 2 weeks of due diligence. And I can contact the applicant to inform them of the decision to approve. We may decide that we need more information. You know, we may look at this application and say, you know, there's an open question here. We need to do some additional verifications. We need to have some further discussions or clarifications about one issue or another issue. So if that's the case, then, you know, we'll make that decision at that meeting that we need more information. It's an open question. I'll get back to them, to the applicant, and get whatever additional information we need from them, or let them know that we've decided that they're not eligible for membership. So, you know, we've got sort of three approaches. Yes, they're eligible. No, they're not eligible. Or it's an open question. We need more information or discussion for the determination. But I think that the answer, one of those three answers at that initial EC meeting, we should be able to make the determination of one of those three.
Hi, excuse me, Robin. This is Michael. I just joined the call. Sorry for being late.
Oh, great. Thank you. Thank you. Welcome. We were just going through the process for handling the membership applications. So let me back up just a tiny bit. So we've got the forms that'll go on the website, and the forms will be submitted by the applicant, and I will go through the applicant, and if sometimes it's going to be a lot of spam, in which case I'm not going to forward it on to the entire EC, and it may have may be incomplete. We may need more. The requisite information might not be filled out, so I'll get back to them and say we need this additional information for your application. So that will happen within 2 weeks. They will always get an initial response from us within 2 weeks of the time that they fill out their application. Although, as Rafiq has reminded us, we have to be careful about holidays and that sort of thing. So it can't be too hard and fast of a rule if it's a holiday season. So then once we've got the a complete application, I will forward that on to the entire executive committee to conduct its due diligence. And so we've got a two-week period then that the executive committee will be conducting its due diligence and verifying the information in the application and the appropriateness of the membership in the NCSG. And then at whatever the next EC meeting, and we're going to have these EC meetings monthly for a while, we can discuss what and make the initial determination on whatever the pending applications are at that point in time. So we can let them know one of three things that at this initial evaluation, that they're accepted for membership, that they're not accepted for membership because they're not eligible, or that we need more information to make the determination. There may be an open question. So we should be able to have at least an initial evaluation at the EC meeting, the first EC meeting following the due diligence. So I will get back to them and let them know if we need more information or whatnot, at least within a week. And then if we determine that, if the EC determines that there's further discussion or clarification or verification is needed, then we can discuss it on the mailing list, and then that application again will come up at the next monthly EC meeting where the decision should be reached. So that is that's sort of the process that I'd like for us to follow, and I think that we can handle these applications in a timely manner. We can have a process in place so everybody knows what to expect and what happens when, and it will be done on the mailing lists and in these calls. Okay, so did anyone have any questions on these on this process?
This is Michael. I just have one quick question. So is it so the process we should tell people will take 6 weeks? Should we tell people the process will could take up to 6 weeks based on the 2 weeks to review it, have questions, and then we won't make the determination until the next meeting, or is it 4 weeks, or I was just trying to
I guess it really depends on how easy of an application is. If it comes in and it's all complete in its information, it gets immediately within 2 weeks forwarded on to the responded to and forwarded on to the executive committee, who then has 2 weeks to do its due diligence, and then at the next EC meeting we'll say yes, this is everything looks good, and it gets approved. So that's the easiest okay. way forward. So yeah, I guess we're looking at about a month.
So you're going to handle all the incoming applications?
Well, I'm going to take the first pass at them and forward them on.
Oh.
Robin?
Yes.
This is Milton. Do we really have to make all the decisions at a meeting? I would think that in many cases the applications would be uncontroversial and you handle it through email.
Yeah.
Once you pass the application on to EC, then if no one objects and everybody says it's fine, then there's no need for a meeting, right?
That's right.
I agree.
That's right. That's right. If some of these are easy and we can do this on the mailing list, we don't need to wait for the monthly meeting, and it can be done on the mailing list. So what I'm saying is, for the not easy ones, then that we need to have some discussion on. At least we'll have a set day by which there will be a decision, such that we can get back to them with we need more information, or we don't think you're eligible, or we do think you're eligible. So it's just sort of a cutoff date that, if it can be done on the mailing list beforehand, great, easy. but for those that can't be, then I think, if we have the cutoff date of the next EC meeting, then by then at least we will have made some kind of, initial determination and can get back to them. But if you've got another suggestion, I'm happy to entertain this.
Well, my suggestion was simply that Michael doesn't need to tell people who apply that it should be 6 weeks. I think in most cases it will be more like 3 weeks.
Yeah, that sounds right.
Okay, that's fine. So when you get the application, you're going to look it over and then send it to us to review, or
exactly.
Are you going to make?
Yeah, okay. Look it over, and as long as it's complete, I'm going to. Right. I mean, I'm not going to make any decisions on it except that it's been filled out properly.
Okay.
And if it's complete, it gets forwarded on to the executive committee for its decision. But in my experience with NCUC membership forms in the past, a lot of times things were incomplete, or it was just like advertisements for Viagra or something that people would put in. And you don't, trust me, you don't want everything forwarded on that will come in. Only
right.
complete applications. So
okay.
That's.
I think that's reasonable.
Okay, great. So then let's, if you guys are okay with that, I will sort of type that up and try to, you know, make that a process that we can refer to, so we can have note, we know what to expect in the future. So then let's go on to the pending membership applications that we've got. And the spreadsheet that Michael sent out was actually really helpful in terms of having all of this information in one place. So we can kind of, if you guys have that, we can, let's just go through that. And then we also need to append the application that came in from Cheryl Langdon Orr as well.
Yeah, we also received an application yesterday. But I'll let you do this, and then I'll talk about some of the other applications we received, because okay. We didn't include a lot of the other applications that we have because we didn't know what to
do. Yeah,
we
haven't had a process in place, I realize. So, okay, so let's go through these. The first one, the American Lebanese Syrian Association Charity, St. Jude Children's Research Hospital. Does anyone have any comments about this one or opinions about this one?
It seems okay to me. This is Milton.
Okay. Let me put it another way. Does anyone object to this one? Okay. Very good. And I also went through all of these applications myself, so this looks fine to me. The Australian Red Cross Society. Okay. Did anyone have any... Have any opinions on this one?
Robin, it's a new one. I don't remember seeing it, that's why. So really, I don't have any idea about it. So.
Okay. Okay, so you haven't had a chance to look at this one yet? Okay, and I really don't know when it was originally submitted. I just saw it because it was in this nice spreadsheet that Mike created, so I was able to go through it. Do you think you need more time, Rafiq? Is that what you're saying? You want a little more time to look at that one?
Honestly, this is first time to hear about that. So, and I received it more late, I think, the spreadsheet than you, so, because you forwarded it yesterday, I think. So.
Okay,
Rafiq, just a clarification. All of the names on this list, this spreadsheet Amber had created, and all of the names on this list were previously submitted. So although I sent it to you, they were. I just wanted to say for this conversation that they were previously submitted.
In which one? In the first batch or the second one? That's why.
I'm not sure. She just said that these were all the ones that were previously submitted, and I'm not sure where this fell in, but. Everything in here isn't new in the sense that it wasn't submitted, but this is stuff that's been submitted before. So.
Okay. Let me check and see that first one. That's right. Should be okay.
I'm not sure that everything on this list. Some of these are new, actually. Some of them are the missing applications that Rosemary lost, and some of them are new.
OK. Okay. Well, if anyone needs a little bit more time to look at one, then, you know, we can do that. We can put that one aside for now and say, you know, we'll pick that one back up on the list. Because, I mean, I looked at it, and it looked fine to me, but, this was the list I was working from because I had no idea what had come in before.
This is Klaus. In this case, I think we need to go back to the point number one and have a procedure or a time limit about how much time people actually can look at this and use the argument, I didn't have a look at it, for stopping the application. I think we have a responsibility towards the applicants, and I think there should be a maximum of 2 weeks that somebody can say, I didn't have a chance to look at it.
Yes, we've already established that, haven't we?
Yeah, but I thought that's what we were going to do going forward. These applications are, I think the last list that Amber sent was October 15th, and that's almost a month ago. So these have been out there since at least October 15th. And I think that's what Klaus is pointing. Applicants right here have been on for a while.
I see your point. The problem is on October 15th, there was nobody really looking at, you know, sort of taking care of these applications. They were just coming in and going into a black hole, it seems. So,
well, I recognize most of these, and I think we can move on almost all of these today. I don't think there's a big problem. I'm not sure. What one was Rafiq?
The Australian Red Cross.
Australian Red Cross.
Australian Red Cross. Yeah, well, I have no problem with it.
I have no problem with them either.
I don't see... you know, if Rafiq wants to take a week or so to look at it,
I didn't say a week. Just I was surprised, like one day, okay. But just to clarify, even if Amber sent them, it was in that time that the executive committee it was in transition. So we have an interim chair, etc. We didn't really work on the membership. So anyway. If you want, just one day, that's all that I am asking, just to check. I was only surprised. So.
Okay, so you're saying this is the first time you've seen this particular application from the Red Cross, and you need more than a day. So if we put this one aside for a week, and you know you wanted to take a week to look at that application a little more closely, would that work for you?
I didn't really ask, just really to check, that's all, because I cannot really make a decision on something that I didn't even check.
Yes, I hear you. That's totally fair. And at the same time, I want to be fair to the applicants who, you know, I have no idea when this came in. If this came in a month ago and has just been sitting with nobody dealing with it, or if this just came in yesterday, we don't know. So, you know, let's try to be fair to everyone and give, you know, the executive committee ample time to review the applications, but also give these applicants, you know, reasonable response times. So let's do that. We'll put this one aside and for the next week, and then if you've got any objections, you know, please let us know in the next week.
Robin, one quick question before you proceed, because I'm kind of new to this process, so. Are we, when we make this decision as an executive committee, are we making a decision, if it's 3-1, 2-2, or whatever, how does this work with respect
right.
to
well,
it, what's held
the,
up?
That is a, something that's actually in the non-commercial stakeholder group charter that says the decisions have to be unanimous. So the approval decisions have to be unanimous to be admitted.
Robin, I've got a problem here. This
yes.
is Klaus.
Yes.
My problem is this application came in before the 15th of October. Now we are putting it back for 1 week. Then we don't have a meeting for another month. So this application then basically will be 2 months plus in processing, which I think is absolutely not fair to the applicants. I think we need a clearer time frame and a quicker time frame for dealing with these cases.
I think what we're saying is we'll get back to this to them within 1 week. A decision will be made on this one within 1 week because, you know, we're in limbo here with these applications that have already come in. We've agreed on a process now going forward, but you know, what do we do with these ones that came in? You know, I think we all need to be a little bit flexible on. And I think what we're saying is, you know, if Rafiq has an issue with it, he's got a week to speak up and say so. And I think.
And how do we discuss it?
We will discuss this on the mailing list. So.
And when is the cutoff date for the decision?
One week from today. For this app, for the applications that, you know, we think we need another week to look at.
Robin, just really a few days. I'm not really asking for a long time. Just I want to check to be fair, I'm feeling that I'm pushed to make a decision, but about applicant that I didn't even know a few minutes.
Right. I realize there has been a miscommunication with these applications and getting them to the executive committee members for their so they can do their due diligence. That didn't happen. But, you know, so we need to be a little bit flexible. Everyone does at this point, and we need to give people the ample time to do their due diligence, but we also need to get back to these people, the applicants, in a reasonable time as well. So I'm trying to find a compromise here that gives the executive committee members ample time to do their due diligence, but also does not leave these applicants hanging, because I'm really sympathetic to this. I mean, if this application came in, you know, 2 months ago, there's not a very good excuse for why it hasn't been addressed until now, frankly. So I really want us to deal with these applications.
Anyway, Robin, we are trying to fix these days, and after we will have a settled process.
That's right. That's right. I think we've got a process that we can go forward with. But, you know, it's not really clear when some of these came in and so when, you know, time periods start. So we're just going to have to try to be flexible and work together here for these applications, I think. Okay, so let's go on to the Child Protection Alliance. Yes.
Yes. My question about this Child Protection Alliance, when I remember when I tried, I didn't find any information about this. Their membership, and because I'm aware about the child protection initiative in many countries, I am a little bit concerned if the government or something is involved in such initiative. So I want really to be sure that it's about their membership. So if they have, because I tried in the page, in the home page, but I didn't find any information about their membership. So.
Okay.
This is Milton. It is true. They have a website. They have, and then the member section is blank, and so is the staff section. So we, you know, it's kind of strange.
Okay, we'll address it and get more information.
Yeah, I think we should write back to them, this is Klaus, and ask for more information on that.
Okay, so let me just make sure I understand what we need to ask them for. We need to find out about their membership, who their membership is, and their
and
connection
staff
to government. Is that right? There was a concern that they may be...
Just their membership,
okay.
Because such initiative usually it's really multi-stakeholders, so... So to be sure what they are members. If it's just people from civil society, I think it's okay. It's okay. But just to be sure, that's why.
Okay, well, I'm going to be contacting these people and you know, requesting this information. So I want to make sure that I understand what it is that we're asking. And we're asking for clarification about as to who their membership is. And there was there's an, was there another, who, the staff, or was there another issue?
No, just membership. That's what the information that I didn't say.
Okay. Okay, so back to them with the request for additional information. What are the next one on the list, the Church of God in Christ? Did everyone have a chance to take a look at that one and have any thoughts on that one?
This is Milton. So we handled this during the initial phase, and the issue was whether they had any authorization, because the person put forward as a representative was actually independent of the actual church. And so did we get a letter from them?
No, I sent over the weekend, I sent you the link. If you go on their website, he's listed as a staff member. Although he's an attorney outside his own practice, he's listed as a staff member who's employed by the Church of God in Christ as a staff member attorney. So he's linked to the organization. He's the special counsel for the presiding bishop of that organization. I sent that in the email that I have forwarded. And I think because I sent it to the EC list and it came back undeliverable, and then I forwarded it to Robin and then copied you on it, Milton.
Oh, okay. So that
I sent that over the weekend.
Yesterday or something?
Over the weekend. If you go to their website and look under staff, his picture is there on the general counsel for the Church of God in Christ on their website.
Yeah, I think that's okay then.
Robin, what day did this was this the
I sent it on the 5th. I'll send it again now.
You have the new EC address?
I'm not sure, but I'll send
EC-NCSG@IPJustice. EC-NCSG at IPJustice.org.
Okay. All right, I just sent it. If you look down in the bottom of the first email I sent, there's a link there that takes you right to the legal counsel's page, and Ulysses is there as part of the staff.
And you're saying, okay, and here's the email. Oh, I'm sorry. Was there an independent verification that was sent? Or was this, because I don't know that we needed.
That was what we'd asked for originally. We had not asked for a link. We had asked somebody in the bishop's office to send us a letter authorizing this guy.
But I don't understand why that would be necessary if he's part of the staff. I mean, it's not, why would they apply if he's part of the staff, why would he apply if they're not wanting to be a part of it? That doesn't make sense.
Well, for example, I could say that I represent Syracuse University, but I don't. But you could find my name all over the websites for Syracuse University.
Yeah, but if you look at the page, he's there as part of the staff under the general counsel's office. So what, and it shows what his title is.
I guess that wasn't really apparent before. I think this is helpful.
Okay. I think the problem here is just that if Ulysses had applied to us directly and said, "I'm applying on behalf of Kodjik," then I would.
applied through the MPLC, Milton. He applied through MPLC. We took his application, and the application was forwarded to the EC. So, I don't understand.
So what's stopping him from saying now, I want to join NCSG directly?
What? What is stopping him from doing what? I didn't hear your question.
I'm saying, is he able to send the executive committee a direct request?
Yeah, but again, this application, like some of the ones in here, have already been submitted. The issue was he authorized to represent the Church of God in Christ? There's evidence here that he's authorized to represent the Church of God in Christ as a staff member and special counsel to the bishop. So I don't understand what other information do we need to supply? I mean, I don't understand. Why do we go back to him and ask, what do we ask him for? I mean, I don't get it.
Well, again, I think on a going forward basis, in this case, because of the legacy issues, I'll make an exception, but we want the people applying to apply to NCSG directly.
Well, that was never the case before. We're a new constituency. They don't even understand what NCSG is. They're applying to MPOC. MPOC's a part of NCSG, so they would evidently. They're going to be part of NCSG because we're part of NCSG.
That was the initial misunderstanding that got us into so much trouble. The first round was because it was made clear to Debbie from the beginning that members were supposed to join the NCSG first and then join a constituency.
I don't know what conversation you had with her, but with respect to this, I mean, I don't know what else we're supposed to ask them for.
Yeah, I mean, I think that, seeing it on their website, it's pretty clear that he's a member of the organization. So I think this one is okay.
Okay.
I think it's okay.
Okay. Okay, so let's this one, did anyone have any objections or is this one allowed in then? I'll let them know. Okay. All righty. So the next one on the list is the Civil Society Movement Against Tuberculosis in Sierra Leone. This one there seemed to be an issue with because they don't have a domain name. Is that right? Did I misunderstand? They don't have a domain name?
I'm not sure.
Okay. Yeah, because it says in the H field, unsure how EC wants to decide on this. It's a small organization that doesn't have infrastructure to support a domain name when free options are available. And the reason why that's an issue is because the NCSG charter, in order to be a member of NCSG, you have to have a domain name. So I think they might want to reapply, get a domain name and then reapply.
Okay.
Or just slightly rephrase it. This is Klaus saying, please, could you give us your domain name? And if not, please register the domain name and then reply again.
Yes, exactly. I mean, let me just pull up the charter that talks about eligibility. So, yes, under 2.21 eligible organizations, the second criteria is be the exclusive user of at least one domain name. And so, they may have a domain name and we don't realize it, but it says here in this field H that they don't have one. So that's why I wanted to flag that as something we need to take care of. So, okay, so I will get back to them and let them know that they're ineligible unless they have a domain name. Okay. And then the next one on the list is the Goodwill Industries. Okay. Did anyone have any thoughts on that one?
I thought we had approved that. I have no objection. And really, I remember approving that, in my opinion, back in August. Or after we got some kind of a... I think we asked for more information, and after we got it, I thought that they had been approved.
Okay. Did, Does anyone have any objection after doing their due diligence? Okay, so I guess this is approved. Going once, going twice. Approved. Okay, next one on the list, Information Technology Association of the Gambia.
Robin?
Yes.
I think we have an issue for this application.
Ah, okay. What's our issue?
In their constitution, they accept corporate members, which are business. They accept both commercial and non-commercial, I think.
They accept what? I'm sorry, I didn't hear you, Rafi.
Commercial
organizations. I couldn't hear what he said.
Commercial organizations.
They accept business. They have what they call corporate members, which is they define as business established. And according to the law of Gambia, engaged in the business of ICT.
I looked at this also, Rafiq, and in my opinion, this is basically a trade, an ICT trade association in the Gambia. I actually know the head of it, Ponsole, is he's somebody associated with Diplo, and he's a good guy and everything. He's involved in IGF. But he might want to, I mean, based on my understanding what the organization does and what it is, it's more like the ITAA in the U.S.
Right.
Okay, independent from them directly as an organization, I think I would like to suggest, this is Klaus, that we need a basic conversation about involvement of governmental and private sector in NGOs and how that influences their ability to be recognized as a valid NGO or not. Because for me, there are a lot of organizations nowadays who basically got the private sector as a membership and things like that. And I think it really deserves in detailed discussion and a discussion which is based on reality, because I think NGOs today, which are purely operating inside the NGO sector and have absolutely no connections to the private or governmental sectors, are fairly not viable, at least in my experience. So I would suggest it doesn't have to be now, but I think we should really have an in-depth discussion about this topic.
Klaus, the problem is the charter. It's defined this kind of membership, the charter of the NCAG. So that's why we cannot accept like trade association, etc. Even for example, the ACC, the International Chamber of Commerce, it's association, but it has business members. That's why they cannot join the NCAG. So it's not just NGO activities or NGO as how it's defined in each local law, but it's the membership which also define if they can join NCG or not. If they accept both commercial and non-commercial, we have a problem. If they join the NCG, we are non-commercial space, and that's why we are trying to check the membership.
Well, it's not just a question of
membership. I'm sorry.
In fact, it's not primarily a membership issue. It's a mission issue, the purpose of the organization.
Exactly.
So I think it's basically kind of an industry development association. So, yeah, many nonprofits have corporate support or donations or board members. That's not a problem, I don't think, in most cases. It's more what is the mission of the organization?
Rafiq, I completely comply with you and agree with you if you're saying, look, this is a trade organization. In this case, you are absolutely right. But there's another cases where organizations are really NGOs, but they got private and governmental members or partners or whatever, which I think shouldn't exclude them from being part of the NGSG.
I think that's one of the borderline cases that we'll have to discuss. I agree with you. We should have a discussion of that and try to develop clearer criteria for handling those kinds of cases. But especially in the developing world, as you probably know, there's these lines get blurry.
Milton, it's in the problem is how we define it in the NCAG charter. What's the eligibility to be in the... So that we talk it also about the membership. So I'm not really, how to say, I'm not wondering or guessing it's from the NCAG charter. I'm trying to find the text exactly, but...
Okay, well, it sounds like we're going to at least have to have more discussion about this one and the extent to which an organization can be commercially supported or commercial membership for eligibility. So I want to move on to the next one if we can, because we're running out of time and I really want to get through this list. So the next one is the International Baccalaureate Organization.
I didn't find a clear membership for this organization.
Okay. So this is another one that maybe we need more questions on. We need to ask them to who their membership is.
The chart says it does not have membership.
I'm sorry, what was that?
It says on the chart they do not have membership.
Right, right.
So what is it exactly? It's a foundation, something? Or what?
Yeah, it's a foundation.
Yeah, it's a foundation.
Rafik, did you think you needed more time with this one?
It's just why I was trying to find about the membership, because I remember they say they provide like service, etc., about like kind of certification, etc. And I am getting used to this kind of certification. My field, like in the IT field, they have like the Linux Professional Institute, etc. Even they have like a foundation structure. They are mostly doing like a kind of certification and training business. So I just try to check clearly what is their mission, or it's really non-commercial. That's why I try to find if they have membership, something like that.
I mean, if they are a foundation, that means it doesn't necessarily have a membership. It's like my own foundation, Fundación Chaskimet. We have a board. But we don't have members, and I think in that case you need to look at the board. If it's a foundation that doesn't require and want membership, look at the board, and then that needs to be the basis of your decision.
So should we follow up with them and get more information from them?
I mean, if the issue of membership, he's not going to find that.
It doesn't make sense to ask them for membership if they don't have membership.
Yeah, no, I mean, I think the question Rafik is asking is where do they get their support from? If it is a membership, then how are they supported?
Mostly because my understanding is that they don't have membership, so they are a foundation. But also they provide many kind of service, like certification, etc., to really a huge community. But so it's
so you're
and also
they're part business too.
because they get fees like accreditation, so it's not even they don't have membership. I think they accept like accreditation fees. So that's why that's what I'm now recalling about that case. So
I'm sorry that I'm butting in again. It's Klaus. But that's the reality of a lot of foundations all over the world, that they provide services and get you remunerated for these services, and these service, this remuneration going in to sustain the foundation. And I think that is actually a laudable business model for foundations nowadays. They just can't survive on foundations nowadays, can't just survive on donations and things like that. And for a foundation to provide services and get remunerated, as long as these services, that remuneration goes 100% back into the non-profit of the foundation, it's absolutely no problem.
Klaus, just I want to clarify something about foundation. Even in different country, they use the same terminology. It doesn't really have the same meaning. I think the foundation, like United States, it's not the same like in France. In, for example, in Tunisia, we don't have this concept at all. I think in Japan, they don't define foundation. They have, I think, foundation, but it's different. So we should be careful when we say foundation and we try to define like a generic concept. That's why we try to check like membership also. People now say that about the members of the board or the mission, etc. So we with all this different information to try to have to draw that image of these members and to check if they are really have that non-commercial nature. So that's why I'm just, you know, and because for me that's I'm just trying to understand.
Okay, so I just want to make it clear that I have no objection to this organization. It seems to be a umbrella organization that ties together a bunch of private universities or schools around the world.
No, I have no objection either, so.
No objection.
Okay. Rafiq, did you want to take some more time to look at their... to look at them a little more closely? We need unanimity to move. To
okay,
approve.
No problem. Let's move on. Yeah, no problem.
This one, when you say no problem, you mean you would vote to approve this one, or?
Okay. So as I didn't really succeed to ask for my point, so let's move on. So it's okay.
Okay.
So was that a yes, or what was I didn't hear?
I heard an approval. Did I?
All right.
Did I mishear that? Okay. The next one on the list is the Cass Weeshaw Community Resource Center, and this is another one that had a special note that it doesn't have a domain name. So I think we have to get back to them. And
there was a domain name, I think. You have one here?
Let's see.
On the list I'm looking at.
Okay. I'm number 11. What's the domain? I'm seeing a keshwa.am.net. Yeah, so that's so. And then the next column, column H, says it doesn't have a domain name. So, I mean, it's kind of an easy fix to make, but it needs to be done. So I'll get back.
The site is, I mean, if you put that link in, there's a domain, there's a website for that.
I think the issue is it's not like their own domain name. They're not an exclusive user of a domain name. I mean, I think maybe they've got a website here on this 8m.net.
freeservers.com is what 8m points to.
Okay.
All right. Okay.
So, I mean, again, it's a pretty easy fix, I think, and it's pretty clear in the charter that you have to have the domain name, so I'll let them know.
Okay.
Okay, so let's move on to the next one. Okay, and actually, we could talk about the next three together, the National Coalition for the Homeless, the National Grange of the Order of Patrons of Husbandry, and the Pilots and the Paws. And the reason I say we could talk about them together because they've got the same representatives listed, trademark attorney James Bickoff, outside counsel. So these three here, I guess, present some problems.
Robin, can I ask you why that is a problem? Because there are a lot of organizations which are completely different using the same legal representative.
Right. So the, I think there are two issues here. One issue is if you're going to have an outside counsel represent you, we need to have that verified from the organization. So that's one issue. And then the second issue is aggregate voting and the appropriateness of one individual representing several organizations in the stakeholder group. So they're two separate issues, but they apply to this group of three applicants. So I wanted to open that up and see what anyone had to say on that.
I just want to make an observation there. For example, the reality in Ecuador is that there is only one NGO lawyer in the whole country. His name is Juan Carlos Olima. So you would, from every application in Ecuador, you would get the same name. I just want to put that in as a reality check.
I just want to make also a point. You know, this idea to be represented by a lawyer, it's quite strange for me. We have different backgrounds, but it's strange. Why? Because we are in policy field. We are not really in court or legal field, so we need that each organization to be represented by a lawyer. So I understand the close point from Ecuador perspective, but in other countries we don't really, organization don't appoint lawyer to represent them because they don't fight always. Just they want to represent someone to defend their opinions, etc. And when they need, like we are here in the ICANN, we are just discussing about policy issues related to my name. So,
Rafiq, if I may interject something, I think it just depends on the organization. And these organizations are small organizations with not a lot of money. And if they can get pro bono representation, particularly around this area, then that's quite common in the United States. That's not some strange thing that you would have in
the United States is not the rest of the world, so that's why we...
No, and I understand. No, I was just making a point. I wasn't saying that it was to apply to the rest of the world. You were saying that it was that was where the issue was, but I'm just saying from being in the United States, that's not an uncommon thing to do. So it's...
Well, from the perspective that I'm looking at this issue, which is, you know, sort of our role and responsibility to the stakeholder group, and one of the things that, you know, we were really charged with, particularly by the board, was concern about capture and concern about making it too easy for one or two people to sort of, you know, the policy space. And so that's really where my concern comes in is we need to set up policies and procedures that don't encourage behavior that would incentivize trying to capture, but we need to set up policies and procedures that will make sure that if it's an organization that wants to be a part of this, that it really is that organization that wants to be a part of this, and that it's not, you know, a trademark lawyer who's just rounding up a bunch of his clients and putting his name down and getting them to sign off at the end of it. So we have that responsibility to make sure that that's not what's going on here, and one way we can do that is by saying, you know, you can only represent one organization.
Well, I mean, if we and we had spoke with the attorney, and I was going to follow up with him once I get off this call. If he has a letter from each organization saying that yes, they want him to represent them, is that sufficient enough to...
Well, I think that deals with the verification issue, but it doesn't deal with the aggregate voting issue. And I think what we're hearing with the aggregate voting issue is we really want to have see a separate person representing separate organizations, because that's the way that we can prevent...
Is that the way it is right now?
Gamesmanship.
Yes, that is definitely the way it is now.
Okay.
Can I offer a compromise?
I'm sorry?
I would like to offer a compromise because I think Robin's point has some validity. Because then you might have the situation, one guy representing 20 organizations and has 20 votes, which just simply is not fair. But in this case, we've got a situation where we might say that in future only organizations should only have a representative who doesn't represent another organization already. I'm making that clause as a general rule, but in this case, because we didn't have that rule before, we accept all three, and this would be my compromise I'm offering.
Well, I think we have had that rule, and I mean, I think that, you know, we would be sort of making an exception to that for this group, and I'm not really sure that's fair. I think, you know, I mean, we've got two names and three organizations. Can't one take one, the other take the other, and the third organization find their own representative or put one of their own staff members up? I mean, at some level, if they really want to participate, you know, we need to see that they want to participate, and so, you know, I'm a little bit leery about making that exception for this group.
Right. I would add to that I think you're recognizing, Klaus, the issue that we're concerned about. It's more the precedential.
Definitely. I would have the same issue.
Yeah, and so if we let one person do it, then how can we not let others? So I don't like your make an exception compromise. I think, you know, if, let's say one of these organizations, which one of them is, Coalition for the Homeless or something, or the Grange, if indeed Beekhoff represents all of these organizations, then if he's admitted to membership for one of them, then they are, in some sense, represented. And if he doesn't, if Pilots and Paws has very different concerns about various policy issues than the Homeless Coalition or the Grange, which I suspect that they do, then they shouldn't just automatically be having their votes cast by the same person uniformly. It's very strange.
I mean, can't we write back and make that argument and saying, please, could you nominate somebody else as your person?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's the right answer is, you know, we need to have a separate representative for each organization. Yeah, I mean, you know, one of them, the Pies and Pilots, 7,000 employees, and, you know, if they have 7,000 employees and volunteers, surely one of them was willing to be their representative for this group.
But Robin, my concern is quite simply when we write to them, that we explain to them why we make this request, that they exactly understand what the point is.
Yes, because the reason is we want to see a separate representative for each organization because we're trying to prevent, to create disincentives for gamesmanship. And so this is an easy way that we won't encourage that kind of games playing just by having the simple rule that applies to everyone equally.
Okay, so sure.
My concern is if we write back and not explaining it, they might get fed up and don't understand why we're doing it. Sorry.
Yeah.
So if we're able to get confirmation, so if he represents one and then the other two organizations are represented by two different individuals, then is there any other objections to these applications?
Well, frankly, I saw that and then I said, "Oh, that's going to be a problem." So I would need to look at them again because I didn't go any further
once I saw that as being a big problem.
Well, I looked at the Grange. I mean, the Grange is a famous organization. The Coalition for the Homeless, also fairly well known.
I mean, it looks good from where I'm sitting, but I haven't done it.
If they appoint somebody else to represent them, it should be somebody that actually represents homeless advocates and not looking at the whole issue from the standpoint of an outside trademark counsel. I think that's what we're expecting from the legitimacy of the representation.
No, and I understand that, and that's how I was going to frame the question. I just want to make sure that if I go back and get this information and then we submit it and then we're discussing if they're legitimate again, then that's going to really be, one, embarrassing, and two, frustrating, I'm sure, on their part. So if they're able to get actual individuals from the organization to represent them, I just want to be able to say that this is the condition that, and legitimate concern, but this is the condition, and if you meet these conditions, then there's no other issues. That's what I'm saying.
So I can't see any reason to question the legitimacy of the organizations.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
I haven't looked at them carefully, but, I mean, they look like they're, from what I see here, they look pretty legit. So that's
okay, let's imply the one-week rule.
All right.
Okay, so
I'll get on it and get it back, get something to you within the next day.
Roman?
Yes.
Maybe it's off topic, but just when you was discussing, I check it quickly about the Red Cross in Australia, so it's okay for me. You can.
Okay, so you don't need another week for that, so we can approve that one right now as well?
Yeah, it's better to do.
Which one, I'm sorry?
The Australian Red Cross.
Oh, okay.
Great. Wonderful, thank you. Okay, so let's go on to number 15 on the list, the Association of NGOs, the Gambia. All right. Did anyone have anything to say on this application? Okay. Everyone did their due diligence. Any objections to approving it? Going once, going twice. Okay. I guess this one, I will take your silence to mean approval. And we've got approval on the Association of NGOs, the Gambia. Okay, the next one on the list, Tranquil Space Foundation. Okay, this one. Yeah, this one caught my eye in particular because I noticed that the representative, the GNSO Council representative for the intellectual property constituency, Brian Winterfeld, was listed as one of their representatives. And so that didn't quite seem appropriate for a sitting member of the IPC's GNSO Council to be representing a member of the NCSG. I think
but he's listed as an alternate.
Yeah, right.
I mean, right. If his name is off of it, I mean, what does that, I mean, say he shouldn't represent them?
To be frank, I think this is an example of the kind of concern that you've heard about the role that the intellectual property constituency has played in trying to bring in members to the NCSG who have a trademark perspective. And I think, this is a pretty good example of that it is going on and that the concern is legitimate when you've got sitting members of the IPC trying to represent members in the NCSG. So, I mean, I don't have any issue with this particular foundation, but I think it's pretty strong evidence of the kind of monkeying around for what the IPC is doing with the NCSG.
This is Milton. The important thing to understand here is the whole structure of the representational process within the GNSO is this kind of delicate balance. So they have the contracting party house and the non-contracting party house, and they have the commercials and the non-commercials, or the so-called user house or non-contracting parties. And I was involved in the formation of this structure, and it was a very difficult negotiation, and it was all balanced so that nobody can do anything unless they get support across different kinds of interest groups. And so if if the non-commercial side is tipped by the commercial side, or vice versa somehow, if somehow we sent a bunch of members into the commercial stakeholders group that were really trying to vote the way we wanted them to vote, then the whole point of that structure gets undermined. Because it's designed to make sure that there is a reasonable level of consensus among the different people involved. Is that understood? Am I making any sense to you, Michael or Klaus?
Yeah, no, I understand.
No, it's completely clear. But sorry, take my silence as approval.
Okay, I couldn't tell whether the GNSO structure is such a complicated thing that most people fall asleep when I start talking about it. So I thought you might have fallen asleep also.
No, I understand what you were saying.
Okay, so with respect to this application, I think they need to come back with, without a member of the IPC as one of their representatives. I mean, the foundation itself looks like a legitimate foundation. It's just, we cannot
So the person on there, Tim Moody, so he should remove himself also? Or?
No, the other, Brian Winterfeld.
All right. So how do we prove that Brian is not part of? I mean, what is it we should submit?
Well, I don't think we need to prove anything. We just need to say your representatives need to be people who are not members of the intellectual property constituency.
Okay. So
and I actually think the IPC has some rules in their charter about
right. Membership
in more than one stakeholder.
Yeah, we do too. Well. We do too.
Right.
So
right. That's
the whole point about these boundaries and. So all he has to do is replace his alternate.
Okay. Yeah. All right. So they're okay once the alternate is replaced.
Yes.
Is what I'm trying to. Okay. All right. Great.
Did anyone else have anything to say about them? I don't cut that discussion off prematurely.
Well, I just think it's great that somebody who's running a Tranquil Space Foundation, his last name is Mooney. But I won't make any more jokes like that, I promise.
All right. Okay, so we've got just a couple more, and I appreciate your indulgence of the time to get through these, but I feel like we will really have accomplished something if we can at least make our way through these today. Okay, so the next one is the U.S. Olympic Committee. This one was certainly a cause of a lot of discussion on the membership list, NCSG list. Does anyone have anything to say on this application?
Well, my objection to it is not sufficiently non-commercial, would still have to stand.
Okay. Okay, now that I'm thinking about it, you guys have evaluated this one for, and that decision was made, and then so this is sort of a rehearing of that. Is that what I'm hearing?
Yes.
Okay. So that one, I'll have to get back to them and let them know that they were not eligible for being too commercial. Okay. So the Water Environment Research Foundation, the next one on the list. Okay. This one. Okay, this is another one that's like represented by outside trademark lawyer. Did we ever get any kind of verification that this organization wants to be represented?
Yes, we did.
Okay.
So from my point of view, they're okay.
Okay. Did anyone else have anything to say on this one? Going to approve, going once, going twice. Okay, approved. Next one on the list, YMCA of the Gambia. All right. Anyone have any thoughts on this application?
Well, I would just point out, this is Milton again, that Poncelet is the representative, and he was the guy who was purporting to represent the ITAG. So if we had any bad feelings about not accepting the ITAG, then they should be gone now if we accept the YMCA of the Gambia.
I'm not sure I understand that. But I take it you're saying approve. Did I hear that right? Anyone have any objection to the YMCA of the Gambia? Going once, going twice. Okay, approved. And the next one on the list, Young Life. Okay. Right. Any thoughts on this one?
Well, this was another one where we asked for a letter, and maybe Michael can tell me. I think we got it, but I don't recall for sure.
I'm not sure, Milton. Well, you wanted a letter regarding what?
Regarding Jan Morton's authorization to represent this very large organization. If no questions about the organization as being appropriate and eligible for membership, it was just we wanted to make sure that, again, with such a large organization, so many chapters, so many branches, you want to make sure that the actual main head of the organization has approved this person to represent them.
Is that on our new form? Is that on that new form that was sent around today from NCUC? Is that a question on there? I didn't review the form. I just saw the email. I'm just curious.
Yeah, it's authorized. We're authorized to ask, and in most cases now we're expecting that the organization itself will apply so that this would be less of an issue.
Okay. So you need authorization. So other than authorization, they are approved?
This individual. I think that's right.
So once we get the authorization, then they're approved?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
Okay. And then this is all of the ones that I had on Michael's list, and so I'm so happy we made it through those. And then we've also got the application that came in from Cheryl Langdon Orr. And I forwarded that around again this morning. Let me just pull that up.
Well, then.
Yes?
I think we have also another application.
We do? We have another application?
From Glenn Rica?
He did have another organization that wanted to apply. Okay, I'll get in touch with him and send him the membership form. I don't believe, he's filled anything out. He's just expressed some interest. Okay, so the only thing that's not clear to me, because when Cheryl filled out this email, we didn't have a form, and so it doesn't exactly ask for all the information that we, her expression of interest really doesn't give us what we need as I look at it. I don't see what her non-commercial domain is or any of that information. So let me just send her a copy of our form, and then she can fill it out. Frankly, I'm sure she would be eligible. I'm sure there's no reason.
Well, I think that's the right way to handle it now that we have this form, and there's no rush with her. She hasn't been waiting for 6 months like they're not 6 months, but she hasn't been waiting for 2 months like these other organizations. So just say we've got a new form, fill it out,
and
we'll handle it by email if it's an easy one.
Yep, I think that's right. Did anyone else have any objection to that or any other suggestions?
No. I have a, we just got another application in, but it's by someone who's an attorney representing an organization, so I'll get that
information. Okay, so you'll need to fix that situation before it gets forwarded on to the NCSG.
Right. So one quick question. What do we do about, I think we have about 15 other applications that we've yet to submit that we've had,
So what do we do with them? Get them submitted, and, you know, we'll just go through the same process that, you know,
we agreed upon earlier.
Exactly. And, I'm going to have the form up. I've got Constantinos' form already. He sent that to me, so I can have that up, you know, like within an hour. And then when Amber has a form, I think the form she has now is just for NPOC membership, so that doesn't help, but she needs to redo it so it's a joint form. And then I'll put that up as soon as she's got that as well. So that way these folks can filling out, you know, forms that will not create these, you know, sort of misunderstandings and miscommunications in the future.
Okay,
so we did have a couple other things on our agenda, but we've already gone over time, and I think, you know, we really dealt with the bulk, the important things this morning with this membership application procedures and the pending applications themselves. So I let's just, you know, sort of put off to the mailing list the discussion of the setting up the membership committees and the financial committees and our liaisons with the various SOs, because I think that's enough to do on the mailing list. Any objections to that, or you really want to stay on the line and keep plowing through? Just kidding.
Have we tried to do the finance committee? No, I'm on.
you want to talk about the finance committee now? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah. Any objections?
Any objections?
No, not for me.
Okay. Okay. Great. Right, well then.
Robert, yes. How long will it take? It's already 2:30 a.m. here.
Okay. We have an objection, and I am sympathetic to this objection. Let's pick it up on the mailing list, because I think really it's,
Robert, wait. It was not the objection, but just how long it will take.
Wants to know how long it would take. He didn't say he objected.
Oh. Well, I don't think very, very long at all. We've got the representatives appointed from the different constituencies. Milton was appointed from NCUC, and Klaus was appointed from NPOC. And so I think really what we just need to do is we need to build a larger committee of people, volunteers, who can help us with fundraising, who can help us develop a fundraising plan, who can help us with budget allocations and resource allocations from ICANN, getting things that we need in the budget for the next year, or meetings that we need to have funded to the extent that ICANN is willing to support that. So, you know, I think we really need to get that committee up and running and sort of with a work program and some goals. And I think one way we should do that is by broadening it out. And the way the charter says the financial committee is to be composed, it's to be the representatives from the constituencies. But then we can also invite other people as well to participate. And so I think we should take advantage of that and see if we can find some volunteers who have contacts in the fundraising space and some energy and some time and can really help us to build a much stronger and more financially sound NCSG. So, you know, I'd kind of like us to sort of think about who do we know who are members of the NCSG that would be willing to join the membership, or excuse me, the financial committee, and, you know, kind of work with us to build a fundraising plan and to get these kinds of budget allocations.
Yeah, I think what we should do is to give ourselves a week or two to nominate people we think are the right guys and discuss them, and then after we discuss them, to get in touch with them and see if they are willing and able to do it.
Yep.
I think it's a very important task.
Yep, I think that sounds like definitely the way forward. And this committee will also elect a chair that serves as the treasurer, under the charter. Now, it doesn't have to be a chair that's, you know, sort of one of the full voting members, the official constituency representatives. It could be one of these people that we, you know, just invite on to serve as the treasurer. So I like your idea that let's just sort of think about who we want and nominate people, and then we can have some discussion on the list. You know, I think the more, frankly, I think the more the merrier when it comes to skilled people with connections and contacts who are willing to put time and energy into fundraising for us. So I think, you know, any and all suggestions will be welcome, my own point of view at least. I don't know if anyone else has any other suggestion for a way forward on that. Okay, great. So then we can now call this meeting to a close, and I thank you all for going over, especially, and for your time and attention and going through these applications with me today. And I will get back in touch with the various applicants and let them know the outcome of our decisions, and see you all on the mailing list where we can pick up our discussions together there. So thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Thank you, everybody.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
We're cheering, Robin.
Bye-bye. Bye-bye.